The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back on this special day where we are commemorating 50 years of Title IX. And tonight, following us here on the network, a very special presentation that deals a lot with our next guest. It's all about Tamika Catchings, and we don't have the time to go through her entire career as a collegiate or as a professional, because they are both about as good as there has ever been. Tamika, first of all, thank you for joining us. I can only imagine what's going through your mind. I know you've seen the preview with many other of your friends in Knoxville recently, but tonight the whole world will see it. How are you? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am great. And I tell you what, Paul, you have the best song. Like that intro, if I got to listen to that, I was over here. I started rocking my head. I was clapping at one point. I started clapping. I'm like, I mean, we need a little bit more Rocky Top. But other than that, it's all good.
I agree with you. Well, that Taylor Hicks, who the former American Idol winner, wrote and performed that. So we'll see if we can get you a copy hand delivered. Well, Tamika, thank you. I'm really curious because, I mean, we all know about your career, but when you heard about this project, take us through the odyssey from hearing about it, from participating, and finally seeing it.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process, but I cannot lie. I received an email from the sisters, Lisa and Nancy, a couple of years ago, and I'll be honest with you, I thought it was a joke. I talked about this on stage in Knoxville. I thought it was a joke. They were like, we are interested in capturing the 97-98 team. We want to do a documentary on you. And I was like, okay, first off, and no offense to anybody that's had a documentary, this is super awesome. I'm so excited. But at first I was like, I'm a little too young to be having like a documentary on me. But I love having the opportunity to interact with the two of them, my sister and I have an older brother as well. We're really, really close. And so just from Taj and I's story, listening to Lisa and Nancy talk about just their process of putting together Lookalike Productions, and they have a great team member and another young lady named Amanda. And it just all flowed. I was in the WNBA wobble when they first reached out, and then it just kind of happened. I came back home. We were in the midst of COVID and a lot of interaction over the phone and through Zoom calls and all of that. But when we got together, I tell you what, the four of us were a force to be reckoned with, and we had a lot of fun together.
Well, it's kind of been the whole story of your life, being a force to be reckoned with. But when you, I know there are a lot of emotions when you finally see it. You know, some people don't really know how quite to deal with their life being presented, especially this part of it. What was it like to, at a very young age, I might add, to see it all laid out?
It was interesting, but it was fun. You know, like being able to be back in Knoxville, and we had a lot of people come out on Tuesday to watch the sneak preview, and got to stay afterwards and talk to a lot of people. And you know, people that have been following the Lady Vols since before I was even there. And so we're celebrating 50 years of Title IX today. All the young women that came before me, now older women that, you know, that blazed that trail for me to have the opportunity to go to the University of Tennessee. The WNBA started my freshman year in college. So being able to be a part of that and watch it grow in the 4 years that I finished my collegiate career, and then being able to jump to the WNBA. So it's been quite the journey.
And some who know you know you grew up in a pretty cool athletic family. Your dad played pro ball. You have other relatives. So, I mean, I'm guessing here that basketball was always pretty close to you, even at a very, very young age.
It's been fun. I say this in a film, but I believe my dad put a basketball in the crib when I was just a baby. Like literally, I play basketball. I'm the baby of the three of us. So my sister played, my brother played. And then of course had the family. My mom was a track superstar. So I don't want to omit her from the genes that we received, but definitely a basketball family, a sport family. We played pretty much every single sport growing up.
So you get to Tennessee, and you know, everyone, and I mean everyone, has a Pat Summitt horror story. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but she can be an intimidating person. We all know. How did that start out? And I think we all want to hear your thoughts on Coach Summitt.
Well, I definitely miss her, and you know, being able to celebrate Title IX once again, but just her, all about her. I mean, when I think about Tennessee and I think about women's sports, especially women's basketball, Pat was very instrumental in where the game of basketball started and even where we are today. There's not very many people that you can meet, especially in our generation. Of course, we're kind of a little bit removed, but especially in our generation, that don't know who Pat Summitt was and her impact in the game. And so for me, I talk about it in the film. You have to watch it later on tonight. I cannot spoil the surprise, but definitely talked about my first day of practice. And it was not a beautiful thing, but we made it. I'm still alive and thankful for Pat and just her instruction, her belief. She believed in me, and not just as a basketball player, but even more importantly, as a person beyond the basketball court.
I'd like to talk about your experiences in life, because you, at such a high level, both in college, of course, and in the NBA, I mean, you were such a dominant player for so long. You've traveled the world. You've been on Olympic teams and championship teams of every ilk. What has that been like, seeing the world, meeting people from the President of the United States, and I want to talk about that in a minute, to everyone else that you've come in contact with?
It's been a blessing, Carl. Like, I don't know how to express it any other way than just I've been so blessed to have the opportunity, first off, to play the game of basketball. And, you know, you said the NBA a second ago, the WNBA, but I will tell you, in seventh grade, I made the goal that I was going to follow in my father's footsteps and be in the NBA. And then when the WNBA came my freshman year in college, my goal switched. So to be able to set a goal, to see your goal come to fruition, to see this little round basketball, I got a couple on my backdrop, but that ball took me around the globe and allowed me the opportunity that some people never get to go overseas. And to have been able to go to so many different countries, to be able to explore so many different avenues and to learn different cultures, be a part of different cultures, I would just say it's definitely been a blessing.
I read somewhere, I mentioned the president, I read somewhere the other day that you got a chance to not only meet, and I'm sure you've met a few, but referee the President of the United States playing basketball, and he always thought he was probably better than he was. I don't mean to demean him, but take us through that experience.
Well, it was actually when Barack Obama, President Obama, when he was on his campaign trail, so before he was even the official title president. We had the opportunity here. There was a young man that won a 3-on-3 competition, and they reached out to the FIBA, asked if we had players. I was hurt at the time, so I did not get to participate as far as a player, but they let me be a referee. And I tell you what, I don't know what is more fearful, having to play against the president or having to, like, referee, because some of the kids did not know. I'm like, hey, you have to take it easy. One of them almost took him out. And I was like, okay, like, we might need to just call the game because we need to make sure that he's healthy enough to, like, not wobbling up on the stage and on the being able to get named the president. We need to make sure he's 100% healthy.
A couple weeks ago, I was at an event. I ran into Craig Robinson. You may know Craig. He's the president of the Coaches Association. He's also Barack Obama's brother-in-law. He's Michelle's brother, and he was a very well-known coach, and he has told me many times that I think he calls him Barry, that the president really thought he was a much better basketball player than he was.
Doesn't that happen to us all, though? There becomes a moment in our lives where that just becomes, I mean, you get the hoop dreams, and basketball is a universal sport. Just unfortunately, not everybody is as good as everybody else.
So I'm particularly curious when you've climbed so many mountains in at Tennessee and the WNBA as its premier player. You're still very young. You've got your whole life ahead of you, and I know you're involved in basketball, but you're dealing with the same thing a lot of us deal with, except most of us don't have your experiences. Maybe somebody played high school basketball or something else. But what was that like to finally get off that merry-go-round. And I wouldn't say it's normal being involved in management, but it's a little more normal than being at the center of attention.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting process. And yeah, I stepped down from my role with Indiana Fever in February. And, you know, really my faith is a big part of who I am. And so the faith journey of just trying to figure out what's next and having the courage to step down from a role, especially that role, and just kind of like I'm in a space. I own a couple of tea shops here in Indianapolis called Tease Me Cafe Indy and Tease Me Community Cafe. I'm still on the broadcast, so once the collegiate basketball season gets started, I'll be back on there and, you know, helping to broadcast some of the women's games that'll be going on. And my sister and I, we have our own foundation, the Catch the Stars Foundation. So I got a lot of things going on. But in the midst of that, my goal and one of the things that I'm super passionate about is the younger generation and really trying to figure out ways to help our young kids, I don't know, be able to succeed in life.
And I want to close there because this is such an important day, and we have talked to a couple of guests much farther along in age than you who talked about a time when there was no Title IX or it had just come into existence. You had that benefit. For young people watching, I would like to ask you about your message to them who live in a much different world than your elders grew up in, and even you to a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, I always talk about just dreaming big, believing in yourself, being inspired, and continuing to be an inspiration, because no matter whether you're young or old, you can be an inspiration. And then I think the biggest thing is out of dream big, out of believe, being inspired, but the G, and just being great. And I think that's one thing that Pat always emphasized was, whatever you do, wherever you are, show up and be great. And so every single day, my mission, my motto in life is to dream big, but also I want to be great. I want to be all in, present, and just great in whatever capacity that looks like.
Well, Tamika, for those of us who haven't seen the film, it comes on following us in about an hour and 45 minutes, and we eagerly await it. And congratulations again on an incredible life, and we all get to experience what you've been through in just a little while. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
It was our pleasure. Tamika Catchings, and you can see it all tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll take a short break. Back after this.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Hey, we're back. Taking your phone calls, and Rick is up next in Hoover. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are well. Thank you.
Good, good. I was just wanting to respond to Pat's comment earlier. I guess Pat from Florida, I think it was, about not having enough black coaches in the SEC.
Yes.
And I just wanted to compare that to if they're qualified. Has anybody thought about that? You don't just, if you have an opening, say, oh, we got to hire a black coach now because it's mandated. And Sankey said, yeah, we have to have more black coaches. If they're not qualified, they don't deserve to be a coach. That's just like, look at the players on each football team. There's probably 80% black and 20% white, and I'm just guessing on that. Okay, if that's the case, let's say it's got to be 50% black and 50% white. Well, that can't be because the 50% white are not qualified. Apparently, the black players are better, such as wide receivers, defensive backs, linebackers. The majority of those are black. I don't hear anybody griping from the white race saying, oh, we need more white linebackers, white defensive backs, white running backs. That's because they're not qualified compared to the black athletes. They're not as good. They're not as big. They're not as fast. So when it comes to coaches, you can't just say, well, pick a black because it's, you know, Sankey says now, yeah, we got to have 15, 20% black coaches. That just doesn't make sense. It needs to be, if you're qualified, choose him.
Yeah, Rick, I'll let the commissioner speak for himself here, obviously, but this is a message that permeates every campus in this conference. It's something that people talk about a lot. So it's not like, this is, that qualified people aren't being considered. They are. This isn't, every school is individual. This, you don't make decisions collectively as a conference. These schools are members of the conference. And I think most reasonable people would agree that every school should be responsible for the people they hire. And it's up to them.
I agree. And the president and the athletic director combined should say,
right,
okay, today we interviewed two black coaches and two white coaches. Who is the best qualified? Not, well, we got to get one guy because of the color of his skin.
Exactly.
Kick the white guys out. We got to pick one of the black guys, even though they're not as qualified as one of the white guys. That doesn't make sense. If it does, like I said, there needs to be 50% white football players, 50% black football players.
You can't do it that way. And there are a lot.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah, there's plenty of issues legally that would preclude it. Hey, thank you very much. Great to have you on. John is up next in Florida. Hello, John.
Paul, thank you for having me on your show, as always. And also, with today, I'm doing this right off the top of my head, but if I'm not mistaken, the first live sporting event in SEC Network history, wasn't that a women's college soccer game between Ole Miss and Georgia?
I believe you're
if I'm not mistaken?
Completely correct, yes. It was not a football game. That came later.
A soccer game. Did I say football?
No, I said football. You are correct, and I don't remember. It may have been very quickly. We can easily go back and check, but I'm sure you're probably right.
Yeah. So, but anyways, also I had a sister that played softball at South Carolina, someone who was able to benefit from all the laws and legislation. And, I had some great trips as a kid in high school growing up there, going up there during, summer breaks and stuff like that to visit my sister and really got to experience Columbia and the campus and, all that, and kind of just experience what it's like to have a college athlete's life, traveling around the SEC, staying in hotel rooms, and of course didn't go to all the games, but was able to experience it enough, really being able to see the benefits of that. And they didn't have any excellent teams. I don't think they ever won the SEC championship or anything like that, but if you play scholarship for any SEC school, you're a pretty good player. So wanted to give you credit for that. And also, Paul, before I leave, and this will be definitely an uncomfortable conversation, and I've thought about talking to you before, but it never really seemed like the right time, so this may be the right time. So if I'm not mistaken, volleyball season starts right around football season. When it starts is really more irrelevant. What is more important, though, Paul, is as I get older and older, and maybe this is something I need to grow in maturity, but when I see the shorts that those volleyball girls wear, I almost am asking myself, am I watching a sporting event or am I watching something else? And you can definitely tell by some of the camera angle, it's a cameraman that's filming that, right? So, like, how is that thought? Is it just something that we just have to grow up and get over? Or is it like they wear longer shorts? Or because, you know, if I was 18, 20 years old, I'd be like, oh, yeah, look at that. But now as I get older and you get more mature, you realize, just something I wanted to bring
John, I appreciate that. It is uncomfortable. I'm sweating profusely trying to come up with a politically correct answer. Hey, thank you for the call. I don't know how to answer that. I think maturity for all of us is probably the best way to go. Dexter is up next. Hello, Dexter.
Hey, Paul. How you doing today?
Dexter, we're doing great.
I'm from Birmingham. I want to ask you a couple of questions about retirement. I know you're going to never retire because people don't want to see you retire because you look like Nick Saban. You're a hard act to come behind.
Thank you.
You know. And but anyway, I want to ask you, if you did retire, who would you want to do your show?
You know, Dexter, it's a great question. I'm sure at some point we'll address it. I would make this determination. I would have absolutely nothing to do with it. I have never believed in those who try to appoint heir apparents. I think that's somebody else's job.
Cause you're a hard act to follow. I know I don't believe out cause you do. I've been watching your show for a while, and I've been seeing a couple of people do your show when you ain't there, and they can't do it like
well,
you
Dexter,
do.
Well, what you're failing to realize is I'm only 45 years old, so I've got a long way to
yeah,
go.
Yeah, I know. I know you're an old man. I'm just saying. Yeah, I know you ain't Nick Saban. I know you ain't 70 years old.
No, Saban does have me by a couple of years, so. I've always joked, and I shouldn't be joking too much. I've always said I will never leave before Saban.
I know, because it's going to be a because I lost the whole show.
Yeah,
I ain't seen nobody do it like you did.
Can you imagine the day that he leaves? And I was fortunate enough to at least be in the media when Coach Bryant retired. I was not doing this, of course. I was a writer, but I've been there before. It will be a difficult transition. Let me put it that way.
You all thought about it?
It would be something, but I certainly that might be where I say, you know what? I'm not dealing with this again. I've already been down this road. Hey, you take care of yourself. Thanks for the question and always for calling. We'll take a break. We've had a busy one so far, and we're not done yet. Stick around.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. And what an afternoon this has been, a memorable one. And let's check in with Lewis, who is in Georgia. Hello, Lewis.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking the call. First time caller.
Wonderful.
I just kind of wanted to respond to the gentleman, I guess, from Alabama, who was suggesting that people are the coaching situation. Unqualified candidates are coming forth, and all people want is just a chance to be able to do the job. Based on his math of the 80% of one race versus 20% of the other race, as players, that would suggest that there should be more qualified coaching candidates for one race if we were to apply his logic. But I guess his logic seems to think that, one race can play better, but the other race can coach better. That's kind of the implication I drew from his logic.
Yeah. That is patently untrue. And I frankly, in talking to coaches that are trailblazers, they're not only concerned about the head coaching possibilities. Sylvester Croom told us recently he's concerned about coordinator positions as well.
Right. And I'll be one. I mean, we want the best qualified candidate to get the job. That's no problem with that. It's just getting to that interview process is what we
and,
want.
And the dirty little secret, Lewis, and we can all everybody's got to follow the standard and the protocol, but most ADs identify a coach before it starts, and they may go through the motions, but they know who they want.
Right. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you.
Well, thanks for your call.
Yeah, a pleasure. Good to hear from you. William is up next in Maryville.
Hello, Paul.
William.
Paul, two quick points. Great interview with Tamika Catchings. What an amazing young lady. I'll stand by what I think I've probably told you in private. I think that Pat Summitt's illness and death I think when the University of Tennessee lost Pat Summitt, it lost the moral compass that led to a lot of the dysfunction of the last 10 years. And that was the greatest single blow to the university athletic department. But be that as it may, dealing with the issue of minority coaches, you know, the NFL, after the Rooney Rule, formed, and I don't know if it's a commission or a committee, to assist minority coaches in the non-X and O aspect of
sure
being interviewed for coaching positions, because I'm going to take issue with what I don't know what his name was from Alabama talking about, you know, qualified coaches. There's no doubt that when it comes to football, minority coaches are as good or better than non-minority coaches. I think the NFL found that when it came to some of the non-football issues, whether it was how you interviewed,
right,
organizational skills, even social skills within more of a corporate atmosphere, that they set out to basically mentor various coaches in those areas that they felt would help them advance in the future, and had nothing to do with their ability as X and O football coaches, because they felt that those coaches were being discriminated against because they didn't have some of these intangibles that non-minority coaches had.
Yeah, William, I think you're right. And I'll tell a story here. About a year ago, I won't identify who it was, but it will become obvious to some. I had lunch with a former NFL head coach who is black, and he was in college ball at the time. He's now back in the NFL. But he was seeking my advice on that very subject. Because he didn't feel that he got a fair shake. He didn't last very long in the NFL. His record was terrible, but he said a lot of things that would identify what you said, and he felt like the system was stacked against the majority. Now, I know that's changed in recent months, you know, with the Flores lawsuit and a number of other hirings, but that's how he felt. And he said that's how a lot of coaches feel.
Well, I mean, the NFL recognized that because, again, they've got this, and I don't know what it's called, a committee or commission, which the sole purpose is to help coaches.
Well,
and
some of that going on in college. Mike Loxley is, I think, the president of that organization. We had him on about a year ago. He had Nick Saban's on his board. He was a former coordinator at Alabama. He's at Maryland now. But, yeah, those things are – by the way, those things are important for all assistant coaches. And I know a guy who runs a search firm, Dan Parker in Atlanta, and you know, they help. It's like an executive search firm, as you would be well aware of, and they help college coaches, you know, get placed. But they also have a program that deals with that specifically. And I'm willing to bet that your former head coach Jeremy Pruitt never went to one of those seminars.
Well, that's exactly right. I was thinking the same thing. How did he get past anybody in a suit when he couldn't, put two words together in a sentence? And
by the way, he beat out for that job, if my memory is correct, Kevin Steele, and you know who the other finalist was? Mel Tucker.
Right. Oh, went to Michigan State.
So Philip Fulmer hired Jeremy Pruitt over Mel Tucker.
Kevin Steele and Mel Tucker.
And Kevin Steele, you can debate. He was a Tennessee guy, but there was some baggage from a past head coaching position. Mel Tucker's now making $10 million a year at Michigan State.
At Michigan State. Well, and of course, I'll say, go back to what I just said about Pat Summitt. I don't think some of the things that went on at the AD level at Tennessee would have ever happened if Pat Summitt had stayed alive,
I
stayed involved.
She was the moral compass of that university, absolutely. You're 100%.
And I think when we lost her, we lost that compass.
Yeah, well, you can't – well, she's irreplaceable. I mean, there are good people you can put into positions, but there's no one like her.
Well, of course, a parallel is your friend Tim Cook at Apple, because when Steve Jobs died, everybody thought, "Where's Apple going?" Well, they found their moral compass in Tim Cook. Very few organizations do that.
But I would bet, because I like him very much and I'm friendly with him, but that is one of the most unique succession stories in the history of anywhere, where the guy who takes the genius's place, the guy that started it all, that invented it all, it, from a business standpoint, has run the company better. But
but a lot of times the guy that you started all has an entrepreneurial
right.
spirit.
Exactly.
And he's not the best at running it. He was the best at starting it, but he was not the best at running it from an organizational
standpoint.
But
it might be one of the best. I mean, and you know this, William, hiring people, it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're running a fast food restaurant or the biggest corporation in the world like Apple is, the odds of getting it right are not good. You just look up and down Wall Street right now.
Well, look at the NCAA. You talked about that yesterday.
That's almost incomprehensible what a poor choice that was. Hey, thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. Back with much more.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Let's check in with Will in Raleigh. Hello, Will.
Hey, Paul, what's going on?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I got a question about the NIL. It's not like provoked by anything today, but just with seeing some of the things going on with like A&M in Alabama, being a South Carolina fan myself, it's just worrisome because is this going to turn into something like the MLB where it's just these massive teams being able to dish out money to these recruits coming in? Or is the NIL going to ruin college football, basically, is my question.
Well, there are certainly people, Will, who think it is ruining college football as we speak. I don't think it's to that point yet. But I think it just depends on how long it goes on before someone can tweak it, and I think ultimately that will happen. I'm not sure how it happens, though.
Makes sense. I just with some stuff possibly going on today, a South Carolina school can't really compete with some of these schools in Texas, A&M or other schools in the state.
No, I mean, if you ask coaches, Will, thanks for the call. If you ask a coach, who are the biggest threats to your program right now in college football, they would say Texas and Texas A&M, and it's all about the money. Let's continue. Peyton is in North Dakota. Hello, Peyton.
Hey, Paul, how's it going?
That's great. Thank you.
I'm thought about expanding the college football playoff with how loaded the SEC is becoming. Do you think it's going to be likely that they possibly double the amount of teams they have in the college football playoff?
I think when it expands, which will be in the 26th season, we're going to go right back to where we were a year ago with a 12-team playoff. So, yes, the SEC is still the power broker. It makes a lot of sense, and all the reasons why we don't have it in a year are senseless, but doesn't matter anymore. It's spilled milk, as my mom used to say.
And am I allowed to ask any questions about Archie Manning?
Sure.
Who is in bigger trouble as the Texas quarterbacks, is it Archie or Quinn, in your opinion?
Well, Peyton, I don't know. I mean, we really don't know what Quinn Ewers looks like, and he will have the season. Now, if you look at the Texas roster, he's not looking at a great season. I looked at their schedule the other day, and I mean, they're going to struggle. They're going to lose to Alabama badly, I think. They're going to lose to Oklahoma. There's another game on there I don't see them winning in the first half of the season. And then do they spiral out of control? So does he get the blame for that? Does the enthusiasm – I mean, things to remember about you – so here's the schedule that we have on the screen. Bama at Texas Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma. The second half is Iowa State at Oklahoma State. Baylor at the end. I mean, I mean, if you had to project right now, I don't see how in the world they're better than 8-4, and maybe not even that good. So, you know, what Sarkisian bought today is a lifeline. You're not going to fire him when he just landed the biggest recruit in the history of the school. But it's also worth remembering that Ewers was the number one player in the country, and then he skipped his senior season. And he went to Ohio State. So essentially, they have now gotten the number one player in the country over in consecutive years, or you know, with a year in between because of Ewers leaving. That's unheard of. And Ewers is also just, I've seen the power rankings on him. I mean, he and Manning are pretty similar. So he's going to have a lot more experience than Arch Manning is going to have. Let's continue. Mitch is up next.
Paul, I'm going to just ask the question and get off. Do you have any good press conference stories about Pat Summitt?
I told the story on this thing we played earlier about probably my one encounter. But, there, let me also say this. There was no chance in the world I was ever asking her a question at a press conference. I mean, I was a student.
Really?
No, I mean, I was not. She was far too intimidating, Mitch, for my taste.
So she could be temperamental at press conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. I've covered them all in the last 40 years, from Paul Bryant on down. I will say this: when I covered Bryant, I was already a professional. I interviewed this guy every week. We would have a special Q&A session on the phone. So I had a lot of experience with him, and I asked him a lot of questions, including a couple at his final press conference when he announced his retirement. So, but Pat, I wanted nothing to do with her. She scared me to death.
I love it. Miss Pat, you go.
I will tell you the story, and she didn't kill you with words, Mitch. She killed you with a stare.
I've seen the stare.
Yeah, and I don't mean this sound the wrong way, but she had a stare like a serial killer.
The stare on the sidelines when one of our players
she scared me. I mean, I don't know if I've ever admitted that, but it doesn't matter now. Why not? But she scared me to death.
Well, I love it. You know, I've told you a long time ago, I love Pat Summitt.
Well, so. That never stopped me from feeling the same way. But I will admit all these many years later that I was, she, I mean, she was intimidation doesn't describe it, Mitch. I mean, she had you shaking literally in your boots. Thanks for the call. Heading to the final hour, Ashley Woods will join us. We'll continue with our celebration of Title IX 50 years later.